in the depth of reporting. Once again, we see why the disclosure explosion in this 2008 U.S. presidential campaign began or was triggered in earnest at the legendary Chicago O'Hare sighting of November 7, 2006. That was midterm election day 2006, where a 20 to 60 foot wide spacecraft came.
Welcome to another episode of The Dawn of Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and today is January 20th, 2009. Tonight's program is being broadcast live from the French Quarter of New Orleans as we explore more of the paranormal world that we often ignore. It's a facet that gets left behind as we deal with the mundane issues of our daily routine, without giving any of our attention to that other facet beyond our mundane needs to accomplish tasks, pay bills, go to work, with the children, and so forth and so on. Our non-physical self is not being properly cared for, fed, and allowed to grow and mature. As our non-physical form begins to wither, so does our physical self begin to suffer. How can we grow and mature in this fashion, with half of ourselves withering away? No credit ratings, social standings, club rankings, annual income, net worth will really help us in the end. When it's time to make our interdimensional journey, shall we stand at the brink and just loudly shout, "But I have good credit!" as we fail to be properly prepared? So, that's my lot for tonight. Of all good listeners, it is time to give a little bit of attention to your non-physical or spiritual self, that part of you that has never experienced the five senses we depend on in our mundane existence. It's the eternal part of us, and there's more than ritual words said by rote once a week at best, and often only at funerals and weddings. Now, shifting gears, right along here, we are in the French Quarter with a mystical man, an angel reader, and he's an authentic tarot reader from the French Quarter of New Orleans, Joseph Zaba, who is also a wonderful storyteller that has had me enthralled in previous interviews, which we held here at the Class Magic store that he works out of for readings, which is on Toulouse Street in the French Quarter. So, Joseph.
Hello,
I know
hello.
You're a little cold tonight, but I do appreciate you being so cooperative about the interview.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here with you all this evening to share with your audience.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of people wonder exactly what is it like to be a reader in the French Quarter.
Well, I'll tell you, to me, this is boot camp for tarot and palm readers. What I mean by that is, it's an interesting venue. There's nothing like it really in the United States. Venice Beach or any of those other areas y'all may know about just don't compare. A group of assorted characters that one come out and profess their expertise, if you will, or their non-expertise, the case may go. So it makes for a pretty colorful situation, but just like anywhere else where you have business and a competitive situation there, you know, you can have your rivals and factions. So it takes the soul, the brains, and long-term reader on Jackson Square. But I wouldn't trade it for the world. The colors, the flavors, the textures of the Vu Carré, you just can't compare, and this is just one magical city, no doubt about that.
Yeah, I agree. It is a very, very magical place to visit or live, to tour, whether you live here or not. It's just incredible to tour it. Would you say that the energies of the Vu Carré alter the way that you give readings?
You know, I could say so. You know, there just seems to be a certain energy here. It really, for me, it vibrates really goddess. The sacred feminine is what the city is all about. And there seems to be some sort of portal here. You know, I tend to get clearer channels than I have in various other places in the United States. You know, more intense readings. Clients come to me with more intense issues. You know, the clairvoyancy and the telepathy factors are kicked up a bit. So, yeah, I would say so. It's a magical city, no doubt. A lot of high energy and a portal that just can connect you right to a direct source central.
You
want to come dance on the astral plane, this is the place to do it.
Now, would you say that it's something special about the location, the people that are here? You know, what would you attribute the increase in energy?
Well, you know, but part of my theory would be that it would have to do with just residual psychic energy. There's a lot of intense things happened in this city throughout its history, right from its founding up until the present moment. And I think that concentrated psychic energy, and a lot of it has been despair as well. This is the city that Care Forgot, one of our handles here, you know, and of course the pleasure and the happiness principle is kicked up to a high degree as well relative to other areas of the city. So there just seems to be more of an energetic current in consciousness that permeates the area. But some interesting facts, you know, for example, the same line of longitude would be, I believe it would be longitude, as the pyramids of Giza is where the city of New Orleans sits. So there's a geomancy between the Giza Plateau and the city of New Orleans. And symbols, you know, for example, the star and the crescent are symbols sacred to the goddess. The river that runs across it, the Mississippi. You know, an interesting thing about that, I like to play with words, and, you know, you can really see kind of an anagram there that would say Miss Isisissippi. And in a Native American parlance, and I forget exactly what tribe, but an ippi is a canoe. So literally the Mississippi factors out to the barge of Isis, which I think is very interesting as well. And, you know, there's just all sorts of assorted little oddities there that plug into the current of the sacred feminine. The city's got a special magic about it.
Well,
she's referred to as the lady.
You know, even if you take a look at the Mississippi as the flow of living water, well, as it enters the Gulf of Mexico,
absolutely,
all that energy is coming up from the central portion of the United States.
Absolutely, and see, that's something also that is relative to the Gaza Plateau, the Giza Plateau as well, too, you know, the Nile running through, so on and so forth. But yeah, there is something to that. You know, we empty out into the great Mother Ocean, into the great Mother Ocean. It's all one ocean, actually. There has to be a principle there, you know, like an umbilical cord that takes you right into the placenta of the sacred feminine.
Or, you know, the location where this water is being birthed, you know?
Conductive source of psychic energy, absolutely. Nostradamus tapped into water to scry. Shamans and seers traditionally will cleanse themselves. Even Catholic priests will wash their hands in water, which is, again, we have electromagnetic energy, you know, manifests in and through the body physical, and water is a perfect conductor.
And we are mostly water. So, I can see a lot of parallels right there.
And we got the fire thing going, too, you know, with the heat and all. You know, so we got the alchemical fire and water thing going there.
Yeah, and, you know, smoke and steam have a lot in common, and guess what hot water becomes?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And then again,
now we're getting to the ethereal realm. So now that produces steam, which is a metaphor for spirit, yeah? The mist of the astral. It's interesting, you know, as a bus stop.
Hot air of politicians, you know, many of them have spoken here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, we got that hot air too.
This is the home of Marie Laveau and then many other sages and mystics throughout time as well, too. I've heard stories of the old Bayou witches, you know, that the Cajuns talk about, you know, they live in camps on the bayou, and You go to them, and they'll make you a brew and a potion, and they'll cast a spell for you, and they'll have effectiveness in what they do. So just a very, very interesting place to hang one's hat, I must say.
Yeah, it is. And I have to admit, I really love the French Quarter. To me, there's nothing more magical than you're walking along, and it's, you know, in the wee hours, and the fog comes rolling in from the Mississippi, and it becomes a real world where time has stopped. It's rather interesting.
Mm-hmm. Spooky cool. That's my term for it.
Well, to me, it doesn't really even seem spooky. It's surreal. It's
mystical.
You're completely out of time. The effect of fog, muffling noise, and sort of disorienting you to anything but what's immediately around you, and it does create something rather magical.
Absolutely.
I enjoyed that. Now, one of the things that you had talked about doing when we did this interview was doing a reading for me.
Absolutely. I would love to.
And because of the idiosyncrasies of technology in the interview tonight, I'm going to bring on our guest co-host tonight, which will be Greg Miller. And while he's going to be giving the rundown from my side of the coin, you might say, as Joseph does a reading on me. So hang on to your hats, folks. We're going to switch gears here.
Okay. Everybody out there, will just bear with me a minute, and we'll visualize Chia going to meet this for a reading.
Well, grab a seat and make yourself comfortable, mon chéri, and I'll hip you to the program. Have you consulted the cards before, have you?
Yeah, I've got a reading
assignment too. Okay. Well, I break all the rules because I found out that rules limit. And it's a very good point when you're using the tarot or any other type of divination tool to be aware of what your real responsibilities are and how structure can affect a reading. So you want to go with non-structure. You want to go with bypass the rational cognitive mind and allow the intuitive mind to speak to the symbols, because that is, in fact, what actually happens anytime somebody picks up a deck of tarot cards. And it's quite simple, the psychology. Mind communicates through symbols and imagery. It's not a fact. Tarot is a picture book of the human experience based on images and symbols. So anyone that handles the deck has a unique capacity to be able to project a pattern, an accurate pattern, representing themselves and their experiences both now and in the future, as well as tap into eternal wisdom and guidance without them having to be aware of what those cards mean, what order they're in the shuffle, which when you think about that, that's a pretty darn neat trick. So in my professional opinion, we are all thought magicians hallucinating, because every one of us is already there, just by example. And the reason I say that is because, again, because I'm a bit of an unconventional reader, I've noticed, you know, I took a 10-card spread, which is the basic Celtic cross, and through the years, I would go around in that pattern. I would continue until the entire deck was run out. And I noticed, remarkably, that those cards would group and pattern themselves in significant bites of information. So that tells me a lot there. That tells me something really significant is going on in that so-called random shuffle. On the unconscious level, in my opinion, that person knows what every one of those cards mean and how to use anything in those symbols to communicate something telepathically to me. They somehow seem to have advanced notice of the spread I'm going to throw, the framework, in order for those cards to combine in that way as well, too. So, you know, it's absolutely fascinating from my perspective to see this done over and over and over again. And it blows your mind when you're really trying to get into the mysticism of what it's all about and who we all are, because that lends itself to the revelations of mystics from cultures. You know, we're all already there. And, you know, you hear the mystics say that over and over again in various different ways. But who we are in fully acceptable and allowing of all the dance and play within this matrix, within this pool of atomic structures that vibrate in waveform, creating the illusion of form. So this isn't the real reality. Why we're here, how we got here, there's many theories. I have my own personal ones, but that's beside the point right now. What Gia is about to do is to randomly shuffle a deck of paper cards with pictures on them and then hand them back to me, and I'm going to put out a pattern, and we're going to begin to talk. That's all right. You know, I hear that all the time, and it doesn't seem to matter. You know, I could break the pattern accidentally, put a one card, because I'll stop, you know, after a couple of rounds and start talking, something will get my attention. And I may not stay within that pattern, but yet those cards still wind up going where they need to go as I continue the reading. It's the most fascinating thing you could think about. You know, it's like, how does this happen? Who are we that have these abilities? So I stress to all my clients the importance of tapping into who they really are, that part of them that is speaking through those cards that did that magic and that random shuffle. Because that's where you want to be in terms of waking up, in terms of finding peace with yourself and the world and everyone in it. And that's what's going to make the difference in terms of our thought magic collectively creating a society of Homo sapiens sapiens that is consistently in the flow with the rest of nature, yeah, the spiritual forces as well as the physical. Interesting things happen in these sessions. I don't try to control them. I don't try to be right or wrong. I don't try to edit or embellish. I stay true to the pattern of those cards and how I'm getting cued to certain cards or images in the cards to say what I say. And that's the best way, I think, for any reader to approach their readings. You know, put yourself in the right state of mind through your prayer, your meditation, your yoga. Be there to be a channel for the person you read for with the best interest in mind for them, whatever those interests may be. And you're doing your job. Anything more than that, that's what screw a reader up. And you try to own the magic, try to control it. So that's why I work very, very freestyle. And let's see here. I'm putting my cards out with one hand because I'm on the phone. We're doing the interviews by phones with the new technology here, so bear with me, folks. A marriage card coming up there in the outcome for you. Yes, I see. Interesting. Okay, the Lovers. Ooh. The devil has reared his ugly head. And the Archangel Michael just stepped right on the head of the devil. The 14 trumpet, folks, shows an image of the Archangel Michael in the classic Rider-Waite deck. So the interesting thing is I have this iconography already coming forward that shows Michael on top of Satan. And if anyone knows about the image of the Archangel Michael, of course, he's stepping on Satan, and he's got a sword in one hand and scales in the other. And you see that sword right there, Gia? Leo is his ruler, by the way. He's called the Winged Lion. His element is fire, the Winged Lion, with his sword drawn. So the Archangel Michael is already manifesting in pattern in cards and showing guidance for you and assisting you in this process of ascent. This is the imagery in the Judgment card. So there's angel magic. And that's communication, angel magic already coming up. So Michael will have some things to say here, but I want to go one more time around the loop pattern before I start my talking. Interesting. Mother Isis there on the High Priestess card that just crossed you there. Okay. You know, Gia, first thing I want to talk about actually has to do with career, work, money. If you notice here in the pattern, I'm pointing to this one group of cards with the Queen of Pentacles, the Ace of Pentacles, the Eight of Pentacles, the Ace of Wands, and the High Priestess card. That's saying a lot to me. You said a lot through that. And I'll give you the download this way. The Ace of Rods represents creative ideas and input, new input, creativity. Comes up next to the High Priestess. She represents the womb of creation, the undifferentiated creative matrix from which all of matter springs. The matter is the mother. The mother. You know, I got the flame, what can I say? So the mother manifests in the cards here and shows that, first of all, that you have this strong interest in piercing the veil that she sits in front of, that's tapping into the other side, the divine feminine mysteries, These mysteries are available to you through your creative work. And you're taking your creative work, which is the rod, which represents the intuitive functioning, and bring it into the material world, which is the coin next to the base of coins. So the manifestation of ideas, your craft is being honed, and you're finding resolve now in terms of finding a more fluid channel or course of direction as a result of spiritual inspiration and angelic guidance. So I would say new ideas that have to do with partnerships. Now, the card of partnerships is drawing my attention. The potential of a partnership that is not yet fully formed is wanting to form into something viable for you. It shows long-term security in terms of partnership as well. Contracts and agreements coming forward with the judgment card next to the Two of Cups. And if I go to Aries, that symbol of the ram and the emperor's chair there, and I want to say under the influence of Aries, which is this coming April, I see a partnership coming forward, a contract or an agreement that projects out to have success and reaping the rewards of the fruits of your creation. A lot of creativity and the use of media and technology really paying off for you in abundance with the Emperor's card there. Queen of Swords comes up here to describe you as well. Strong-willed woman. The Queen of Swords is a tough cookie. She needs to be tough. She does what she needs to do. You're showing some disappointment in walking away from something that represented security on a material level. I'll put it this way. If you left behind a career that just wasn't fulfilling for you, or hanging on to it just for the sense of conventionality, which is the Four of Pentacles, that guy's kind of squandering the coins there. It caused a lot of stress and a lot of uncertainty. You weren't sure that that's the way you wanted to go, so you made an about face, and it had to do with spiritual inspiration. That makes sense to you?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. But you did good. You're in your element now, is what the cards tell me. And again, April seems to be a very significant time. I'll even back that up because the moon's next to the emperor. Emperor's ruled by Aries. The moon card's ruled by Pisces, so that's March into April, so late March, contracts, agreements, partnerships. Anything going on like that right now with the potential for an agreement or a contract?
Well, I have G and J.
Mm-hmm.
I have not chosen a
date. You are engaged. It's interesting that we have a marriage card in the outcome position here with the card of success crossing it. So that says success in marriage. The Four of Wands represents a traditional relationship, represents monogamy and fidelity. The King of Cups next to it is describing your mate. So your mate is being described through the emotions. Cups represent the emotions. So this is a sensitive, caring cat. It's somebody that can really be devoted to you, who is loyal and trustworthy as well, too. I would say with the Page of Cups next to him, that shows, the Page of Cups is a mirror. That would show that he has a psychic ability.
Welcome back to the Dawn of Shades, everyone. We've had a little bit of a technical glitch. Joseph is in the middle of doing a reading with me, so I'm going to pass the mic back to Greg Miller, and then Joseph will continue with the reading. So, Joseph, you want to tell everybody they missed about 5 minutes, so you want to just kind of summarize what you've been telling me over the last 5 minutes?
Sure, absolutely. The cards wanted to focus on new business opportunities and projects coming forward for you between Pisces and Aries. So that would be about late March, early April. I see a business arrangement that I believe a contract will be involved with. This will bring much success to you, as the cards indicate as well. And this would be a businessman that will come forward and present himself to you. And I believe this person has the resources and backing to really help your business grow exponentially. I see a great deal of creativity and mystical connection as well, too. But the main combinations are showing relationship, engagement, proposal, marriage combinations. So I want to talk about that a bit, back up on that. I got some really good combinations. I got some great news for you, according to the cards feel about the relationship that you're in now. With the Two of Cups coming up next to the Strength card, and next to that, the Ten of Cups, that indicates compatibility, inner strength, and vitality in a happy marriage. And, of course, we can't say it's all peaches and cream. We have our challenges, but that's the Chariot card is there as well, too. But it shows you willing to move forward with challenges with the Page of Cups on an emotional level to be able to integrate the emotions in a much more compatible sense with your mate as opposed to the past. Which underneath those cards, if you'll notice, I got the Five of Pentacles, the two people that are wandering in the snow looking crippled, and the Five of Wands, which are five people fighting with sticks, and the Three of Swords, which is three swords piercing a heart. So underneath, that shows a past influence that has to do with disappointment, conflict, battles, and estrangement in marriage or family matters. So the cards are eloquently saying in that lay that that pattern is not wanting to repeat itself in this particular relationship. That makes sense to you?
I sincerely hope so.
Okay.
Because that sounds like, you know, obviously if I'm single, I was not successful as a
person. Absolutely, and, you know, I tell people that all the time, you know, and that it's going to show in the cards. But the significant thing about that is I don't have those bad cards on top of those good cards. Now, that would be telling me a whole different thing. Then I'd be telling you, the cards are wanting to say it's looking like disappointment and conflict and separation. It's not looking that way. Strong marriage, exactly what the Strength card next to the Ten of Cups represents. And then, of course, we have the card of happiness, the cross of that. That's pretty darn good. That's saying a lot there. You know, I can say you're a little bit on your guard, a little bit weary and based on past experiences, but the cards bode very well for you. They show renewed emotional fulfillment and happiness in a long-term relationship with a fellow you're very compatible with. As the cards describe, as a caring and gentle man, through the King of Cups, Cups representing the emotions, with the Page of Cups next to him, tells me this person has a strong sensitivity on the mystical or spiritual level as well, too. So the Page of Cups is the mirror, so that tells me he has the ability to tap into the other side. And this is somebody who's really growing on an emotional level as well, too. I think the two of you guys will really do a lot of healing when it comes to relationships. You're meant to be together at this time, and the cards are very supportive of the relationship. Now, I want to scan them again and see what else comes up here. Put some more cards up. The Hung Man. I wonder, is that a reference to your husband-to-be? A little psychic humor there, folks. And the Ten of Pentacles. Whoa. And the Knight of Cups. That's proposed. By the way. It also shows chivalry on his part. Well, chivalry, my timbers. That's very good to see. What a wonderful combination. You can see this with your own eyes, how these cards are combining. That is beautiful. What a wonderful thing for the cards to say. The other thing they just went through is work. Three of Pentacles, job satisfaction, mastery of a skill is what you show in the future is a theme that you will identify regarding your career. So you will become very proficient and an expert in what you do. The Ten of Pentacles indicates wealth. Next to a success card, next to the Empress, well, that's abundance and success and recognition and lots of money coming forward, which is probably not your primary motivation in what you do. It's love of your art and love of the mystical. I know that, but there are rewards for you. The cards indicate a high degree of success being achieved in a two-year period. And I believe it's going to start with this partnership that I see coming up in late March, early April. And talk about you too. Want to show you how the cards combine to say what I'm saying. Move that guy over there, but we'll get him close enough. This card, the Four of Swords, which shows the Knight on the coffin, is significant in that pattern. When I get the Death card, the Judgment card, and the Four of Swords together, somebody who is passed, who is resurrected from the grave, whose soul rests. He's gone beyond the veil. Again, identifies himself as a son. Now, I don't know what sign he is, but I'll tell you the astrological influences that are around him. That card's ruled by Scorpio. That one's ruled by Leo. And that's Cancer. Either one of those were his sign? No, that's all right. I'm not trying to guess. I'm just merely pointing out what astrological influences are there, because oftentimes it will be the sign of the person. So let's continue on. Okay. You know, this is a time of exploration for you. The Fool comes up with the Star card. Optimism and inspiration comes through roaming, through wandering, through letting go of the baggage of the past, not being attached to outcomes. You know, the Fool is ruled by Uranus. That energy has to do with radical breakthroughs, inventions, eccentricities. But that says that you can come up with very clever and innovative ways of doing things, and your path is one of non-clinging or non-attachment. It's letting go, it's allowing, it's wandering and exploring the sacredness of life and the experiences of joy in life through the eyes of a child. So your inner child wants to come out. And it's through that sense of exploration and freedom that you find your inspiration. Yeah, I don't think you're the type of lady that wants to be settled down in just one particular place. You like to roam, you like to wander, you like to explore. And that brings me to the home, because the home comes up here as well. Okay, both those cards I point to are home-related cards. Now, decisions come around the home, legal decisions. I have justice and judgment come up here. So this can very well have to do with property, and whether it's buying or selling or renting, whatever the case may be. I'm going to ask you, are you guys looking at any property or buy or purchase property and move to a certain location?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, well, something's going to come up, and they're keeping an eye out. Attorneys, he's booing me into the car to the home. You know, you're going to find a place to settle down. And I believe, you know, this place is really the location I'm wanting to see is south. I'm wanting to see a temperate climate. I'm wanting to see a lot of green and foliage. I'm wanting to see water elements near the home as well, too. But I do believe that within the next 2 years' time, you will find space, you and your mate, your husband, and he will carry you over the threshold of what the cards indicate will be a very nice home in a tropical-type setting. They're showing you surrounding yourself with very beautiful things as well, too. So I think you'll be doing some collecting, objects of art, perhaps. But it shows that you have a bent toward the artistic. You have a natural flair for creativity, and you're drawn to quality in things. You have a way of spotting beauty. Okay, let's see what else these cards want to tell me. This year's going to move real quickly for you. A lot of stuff's wanting to happen quickly. I have the Eight of Wands crossing the Three of Pentacles. Eight of Wands is swiftness and momentum. Three of Pentacles, job satisfaction, mastery of one skill. So again, that's a lot of work, and that's a lot of satisfaction coming out of your work. The Star card next to that, those two, ruled by Aquarius, it represents the use of media or technology to reach the masses, which is kind of exactly what we're doing here. So, again, that's another clue that you're doing what you should be doing. And, again, I believe you have a very prosperous year coming forward here and a wonderful marriage to a mate that there's a high degree of compatibility with this person. So it's not just sexual energy, you know, there's best friend energy as well, too. That means the two of you guys can have sex and still have something to talk about afterwards. but that's a really great combination. That's like soulmate combination.
Apparently lost the connection with Joseph once again, but we're going to continue right along. I guess I will just have to repeat what he says. So, Joseph, you know, you were talking about, you know, how great the energy was, that we had more than just sexual energy, but best friend energy going on. Now, one of the things that's been going on for a period of time here is the identity of my fiancé has been a great mystery. So I thought maybe something kind of fun to do would be see what clues you could gather from the cards about for our listeners. So, do you think we could do a reading to see if you can come up with that, or can you get it from here?
I'm looking. I'm seeing. Let's do this.
Okay. I realize it may be the silliest question you've ever been asked, but I thought, you know, that'd be kind of fun. A common question. But usually the person that's asking it doesn't know, right?
Well, it's not always the case. You know, there's people who really want to get a handle on what don't they know about a person.
Uh-huh, okay.
You know, or, what is it that I need to know about?
You know, some of the questions that we've had on our little poll that we've done is, how long have I known him? Where did I meet him from? You know, what does he do for a living? Where is he from? And so forth and so on.
Okay, well, I will see what I can pick up. There are times I get a lot of detail. There are times I'm not. I won't
explain. So, right now, Joseph is shuffling the cards. And he's focusing on the issue of who my fiancé is. And perhaps he'll even be able to tell us more about what date we should choose for the big event. So now he's laying out the cards in his pattern. And I have to admit, Joseph does have a rather unique way of laying the cards out. But it's same time, when he's doing it, it gives you a rather clear vision of what he's doing. So it's been a very, very interesting layout to watch. And, you know, not that I'm a card reader by any stretch of the imagination, but I can read the titles on some of them, even without my glasses. So we're seeing cards like Page of Cups and Hermit and Judgment and, oh, let's see, what else? Queen of Cups, Page of Pentacles, the Empress, Strength, King of Cups. Yeah, very interesting cards.
Uh-huh. What's going on there? Again, the King of Cups came up first and foremost to describe his basic personality. King of Wands is
Cups are the emotions. Wands represent creative influences. So this is a guy that, again, a sensitive guy, a loyal guy, trustworthy guy, somebody who's very creative as well, too, and has a flair for technology. With the star card there, it says that he's proficient in the use of technology or media and draws from inspiration as well on a creative level. A very creative person, thinks well outside the box. Very devoted to you as well, too, with the Two of Cups, a high degree of compatibility there. Well, the Tower card comes in there also. The Tower has a sense of chaotic energy. Now, that comes next to the Hangman, and with that combination, I could say that perhaps your mate has had a lot of frustration and chaotic energy when it comes to relationships in the past. And the two of you guys have a flow together where it really has a calming, you have a calming effect on him, or I would say even more him having a calming effect on you.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be qualified in saying. Well, the Strength card next to him, it shows that he has that sense of compassion, that gentle touch. You know, the woman putting her hand in the mouth of a lion says a lot there. It's the higher nature, the more passive, yielding, allowing nature that tames the beast within, you know, the pride or the passions. Let's see. How did you meet? Let's see if these cards can tell me that. I will keep going to that Chariot card there. Chariot, one example. Yeah, wait for cues and triggers. And then if I shut down a little bit, that's okay. So I'm not getting anything clearly about how you meet. For some reason, vehicles in the home gets my attention. I don't know if that has anything to do with anything. And was there any, by any chance, anything that had to do with a vehicle accident or something with no? Okay.
No.
No, that's okay. That's all right. I will lose that and let that go. But the cars aren't giving me a clear pattern that would show how the two of you guys meet. What it is giving me a clear pattern is success and compatibility and emotional compatibility, past life connection, and then cars that represent long-term security in a relationship, slow and steady progress, stability, peace, healing coming up as well. And I'm afraid that's all I'm getting there. So, you know, I'm not a master clairvoyant in that sense, I guess, and that's okay.
That's okay.
But again, in my professional opinion is that the two of you guys belong together, that you have a past life history together, according to these cards, their past life connection, and that you're looking forward to a very happy long-term commitment relationship together. Now, in terms of timing, well, that's a bit easier. Leo gets my attention here. Leo would be July, August. The Chariot is ruled by Cancer, which is July, Leo, August. So I would say, you know, the summer would be a great time for to tie the knot. Yeah.
Okay.
The cards show with the Ace of Pentacles, manifestation, with the Four of Wands, manifestation of the marriage or the union. So that would be my take on a timing for you. Let me flip a couple more cards to see if they want to tell me.
Okay, so now we're seeing some more cards coming along, which, there again, since I'm not a reader, they're not telling me a whole lot.
Telling me a bit here. That's the other marriage card. And the Cups that just came up, across the Two of Cups, which is compatibility in marriage. It shows you guys working toward a harmonious relationship, building new foundations in your relationships together.
There's a good balance between the masculine and the feminine energies that vibrate here as well, too. So that's a really good balance in terms of the relationship the cards indicate. And they're showing right action. Both of you guys are moving in the right direction. This is the card of celebration over an announcement, Three of Cups, the announcement of the marriage coming forward. So it's going to go off without a hitch, I can tell you that. And that's about what I picked up there. Study, school, mother, son, reunite, or memories of the past. Well, that's interesting. That's your son came up again in the cards here. Mother and son come up really close to each other. The Six of Cups represents memories of the past. And Two of Cups, compatibility, you know, that shows a closeness that still continues even though you guys are separated by the veil. And again, he shows a symbol of assistance coming forward to assist you, to help you, inspire you. I wouldn't doubt you get some dreams or messages from your son. Perhaps you have through the years, but he's definitely showing himself in the card. And when he shows himself in this particular combination, what that tells me, I would say that your son proves of your marriage partner in marriage.
Oh, that could very well be.
That could very well be. That's exactly what that would say and why you would come up there. And the Lovers came up there next to the Two of Cups, friends and lovers. Ooh, you guys are getting laid. Nothing wrong with the sex life there. That indicates virility. And of course, with the King of Wands, look at the size of the wand on that guy. And the Knight of Cups, proposals and engagements. Again, we did it again in a random shuffle. I think, did I shuffle this time?
You shuffled this time.
So part of me that speaks to the cards has the same opinion that you do. That grouping, pardon me, is even more tighter. Two of Cups, Lovers, Knight of Cups, Ten of Cups. With engagements, my lover is my best friend. We have a long, happy marriage awaiting us. That's exactly what you mean to say there. This is the kind of guy that would hang on to his money as well. I don't see him as a type that's a freewheeling spender. It shows that he hangs on to every nickel and dime. So very thrifty. You don't have to worry about him breaking the bank.
I like that word, thrifty. That's so much better than saying cheapskate.
Let's see, the astrological influences that come around him. You have Aries to one side, Gemini to a other that get my attention. Can I ask what sign he is?
Cancer.
Okay. Well, see, and that was in the Chariot right above him there. Oh, and now check this out. The Chariot is ruled by Cancer. What is the card crossing the Chariot? Cancer. See, that's what I mean. It's always there, whether we tap into it as readers or not. The imprint is there. So I somehow knew without consciously knowing that the sun was in Cancer. But it took a bit for my conscious mind to... Well, actually, I didn't get it. You had to tell me. Because I was going over here with these two cards, the Lovers and the Strength card, Gemini and Leo. But that's okay. I don't mind being wrong. I get a kick out of knowing that the sun is crossing the card ruled by Cancer. It's the Chariot card. And for all you that... they have doubt about that. So all you got to do is get a book on the tarot and find out what are the astrological rules of the major arcana cards. Okay.
Well, Joseph, we're about to go on break here.
Cool.
So can you, like, hold your thoughts for a few minutes?
Absolutely.
All righty. Well, folks, it is now time for a break. Stay tuned to the Dawn of Shades, and we'll be right back with our guest, Joseph Zaba. Welcome back to the Dawn of Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and tonight we are live in the French Quarter of New Orleans with an authentic angel reader, Joseph Zaba. So, Joseph, while we were on break, we were talking about a few things. So,
let's illuminate our audience a little bit. Can you tell me a little bit more about channeling and how it works?
Sure. Well, based on my experience, a channel is a transmission that comes telepathically from one psyche, one consciousness to another. Whether it's a soul that has been in the physical world, that has crossed over, an angelic spirit, or a guide, I believe that a transmission comes through the person's consciousness in the form of images. I don't identify with audible words. I don't get like a stream, like a voice talking in my head. It doesn't work like that. What I see are pictures and images that my biocomputer, my brain, translates into words. That's the best way to describe channeling. There's different types. I'm not a trance channel, meaning I don't go into a trance state and let an entity come and speak through me. And there are those that do, and where all that goes, I mean, I have my take on it, but I tend to think when one gives up use of the bio equipment to another entity that's not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, I have to admit, I'm a little possessive of my own mind,
absolutely.
The idea of something else controlling it, yeah. Okay, so, you know, when you get a channeling experience, is it something that you seek out? Does it happen spontaneously? How does it happen?
It happens spontaneously. You're not in control of it. You can't own the magic, and that's the humbling thing about what I do. For example, I would have loved to have been able to come up with direct hits left and right for you, and for some reason it didn't want to come, and I didn't push it because I've been doing it too long. But I'll give you an example. In 1999, I spent some time in Brighton, England. And I was flown out there by a couple I did consultations for here in New Orleans. And they wanted to learn a yoga technique and do some counseling work and flew me down to England. And I happened on the town of Brighton, and there's this great big amusement park that goes out into the sea, and a little gypsy caravan on the amusement park that I wound up renting with an Aussie leader named Gypsy Jim. And I had already been reading many years, you know, so I'm aware of how psyche reflects through the patterns of the cards. I was aware of combinations of the cards that show souls crossing over, but not yet had a channel from the other side. And this cat comes in, British guy, long-haired, mid-30s, wearing a long wool jacket, and wants a palm reading. Gypsy Jim had left his palm sign out, and by accident didn't bring it in, and I don't do palmistry. I'm aware of palmistry. I know how to. To me, it's not my forte, the cards or my crystal ball. So I couldn't switch him over, and that's okay. I gave him his palm reading. So I wanted to give him something more. I wanted to give him what I really do well. And I went to hand him the deck, and as I went to hand it to him, the bottom card was a death card. Now, this particular time, it was a distinct phrase in my head. He's grieving a woman's death. So I've learned through time to... You get an impression, you bring it out, right or wrong. You don't try to be right or wrong. Just say, hey, this is what I'm feeling. Does this make sense to you? So I say, are you grieving a woman's death? And he says, yes, but. Don't tell me any but. So from the bottom up, I start putting the cards out in a random pattern. Because already I've been doing this enough to know that random patterns they're not random. There's an order will come forward. And sure enough, I get a pattern that shows a soul that has crossed over. Queen of Rods describes her, a red-haired woman, passionate woman, the Page of Pentacles next to the Sun card. She has a darker hair, darker featured son, the Page of Swords crossing him. There's protection. I think maybe she's saying to protect your son. And I was off a little bit, and I'll qualify that in a moment. In any event, I see through the pattern that she died very suddenly. She died before her time. Nobody knew what exactly happened to her until after she had passed. And as I'm talking, you know, again, I get these cues in my head. And all my cards are spread out, you know, and I got this pattern out there. And I keep getting drawn to the Ace of Cups. And every time I get drawn to that card, it shows a hand of God coming out of a cloud, holding a chalice with streams of water going into water, and the symbol of the white dove, the Holy Spirit. But every time that card, I get cued to it. And the only way is to say that somehow I am compelled, my physiology is compelled to focus on a particular image. Every time I get that, I hear in my head, in my own voice, tell him I'm happy he came to the sea. No accent, no, nothing, just tell him I'm happy he came to the sea. So I let this happen a few times until finally I'm compelled. This is meaning something. So I blurt out, I said, I don't know if this makes any sense to you or not, dude, but I keep getting drawn to this card. I'm showing him the image, and I get in my head that I think she's telling you, she wants you to know that she's happy you came to the sea. And he starts bawling like a baby. And he says, I come tonight, scatter ashes in the sea. So now I'm blown away. And at this point, I'm already getting in a heightened state. And I've never had this degree of a channel come forward, right, where I get a message that has a direct connection. And he's wanting to interrupt my flow, and not interrupt in a negative sense, but he's wanting to give me feedback, and I'm telling him, just wait until the reading's over. Now, we finish the reading, and I say, okay, who am I talking about? He reaches in his jacket and pulls out a picture of his red-haired dog, Sophie. Red-haired woman, yeah? With her darker pawed, darker snouted son in the picture. And I said, the first thing I said was, now I know what she was trying to tell you. Her son will protect you now that she's gone. And this man came that night to scatter the ashes of his beloved pet Sophie into the sea. She found a medium in a gypsy caravan before he even came in and had that whole deck pattern. And somehow, I don't know how she knew or how that worked, where when I put out a random pattern, her pattern formed, but it did. And we were both blown away by this. And I'm crying at this point. I told this guy I've had this gift and was told I could use it, but I've always been afraid of it. And I said, I'm very humbled by this. And he laughed, and I said, what's so funny? He goes, my name is Ben Humble. And I go, God's got a great sense of humor, dude. And that's an example of channel. Yeah?
Okay. So, all right, we have these people that have had various kinds of visions about the future and future events and whatnot. And, you know, the question is, what's the origin of this stuff? You know, am I hearing the voice of God? Where is it coming from? You got any ideas on where they might be hearing it from?
Sure. You know, see, we're getting into such a gray area when it comes to what is authentic mystical revelation and what is psychosis and delusion. And this is the best way for me to explain it. We, as spirits, as long as we are in body suits, are bound by the physiology. And the quality of the physiology will determine the quality of the translation. So if your wiring's really screwed up, it's going to be hard to really get out what's really being said. You know, the schizophrenic that has the paranoia, there's no doubt in my mind that they're tapping into something real, but the bioequipment is not arranged in such a way that it comes out in a coherent sense. You know, that thing about somebody watching you. Well, in my professional opinion, there is a worm in the program that watches everything, that negative force, yeah? But when you start feeling you got implants in you from Pleiadians or, you know, the secret government following you with helicopters, now you're spinning into la-la land. And, again, a lot of that has to do with the wiring. And the wiring of the brain, you know, the nervous system, can be rerouted. Jim Leary and John Lilly coined the term neurological metaprogramming back in the day, and that's rearranging psyche, saturating psyche with prime source archetypes and colors, numbers, shapes, and sounds, confounding and discombobulating the rational mind until it falls and the intuitive mind comes forward. And it's not for everyone to do. Because
it sounds a little painful.
Well, it's very dangerous, because if the body-mind is not appropriately prepared to be a clear receiver or a channel, it's going to get distorted. And that distortion can lead to all sorts of paranoias and psychological dysfunction. And that's where delusion, I believe, comes from. One man's schizophrenic is another man's shaman to be. You know, just study the ancient records and see who were the ones that were chosen.
I wonder how we would decide whether or not we were having a schizophrenic episode or if we were having a vision.
Well, you know, time will tell. But again,
but wouldn't
quality...
a schizophrenic tend to be schizophrenic all the time?
No.
No?
Yep, there's cycles. Everything's in cycles. People have cycles. Sometimes you're clear. Sometimes your mind is totally disoriented. You know, you hear many stories of the person that, you know, stop taking their meds and they're okay for a while, and then they just spin out, but somehow they get back normal without the meds. Who's to say really what's going on there? But again, you know, separating the wheat from the chaff is very difficult there. Clarity and consistency in the message is what you look for. You look for the quality of the message, too. Is it based on paranoia or manipulation? Is it based on doubt and fear? Or is it based on love, acceptance, tolerance? Is our true kernels of wisdom that resonate and strike a chord within anybody coming forward, or is it all psychobabble? Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, in my years in Sedona, Arizona, you know, cats would come up with channels from so-called Pleiadians and Arcturians and souls with the names like Zeus and Woosh, and, you know, and there's a lot of dysfunction going on there, you know.
Now, you do realize that many people consider Sedona to be the mecca of the New Age wisdom.
Yeah, you know what the running joke was the time I was there? 100 channels and nothing on. I'm not kidding.
Okay, so that may not be all it's cracked up to be.
No, and again, you got to look where you're at. The body-mind has to be at a certain level, attuned to a certain frequency to get an accurate transmission. And then who's to say what kind of shape-shifting entities are out there pretending and playing games with you as well, too? For example, in my readings, and when somebody shuffles that deck, many times my clients will spontaneously form prophetic patterns. And they're patterns that revolve around the sacred feminine, the goddess, the Holy Mother manifesting pattern in the card. And like the judgment card will come up next to the world card, world judgment. Wheel of Fortune will be right there, cycle of time, and the prophecy that comes up. For example, I'll get the Ten of Pentacles, which shows the tree, the Kabbalistic tree of life, next to the star card, the kingdom of heaven. Yeah, peace on earth, the peace signs will come up, the signs of resolve. The prophecy that comes from this source that identifies itself as the sacred feminine and the spontaneous throw of many of my clients' cards doesn't predict an apocalypse. She shows earth change. She shows a restructuring, a regeneration, though, and a transmutation into a higher form as opposed to an end-of-the-world scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very cool to see that consistently coming forward.
Well, you know, despite all the apocalyptic prophecies that we've all heard, they've been predicting the end of the world since the beginning of time.
Yeah.
So you have all these apocalyptic prophecies, but there's an awful lot of them out there that say, you know, it's not the end of the world. It's simply a time of change.
Absolutely.
Change. Yeah, you know, and before any time before you have construction, you must have destruction.
Absolutely. It's part of the process. You know, the Red Hot Chili Peppers got a line in one of their songs. How does it go? Destruction leads to a very rough road, but it also breeds creation. You know, it's part of the process. And if you trace the ancient records, you know, that's what I tell people, you know, do your research. You want to sit down and have an intelligent conversation with me about mysticism, you better have done your research, because I have. And we have gone through these epochs of utopian societies existing on this planet, of Homo sapiens sapien in sync with the rest of nature that has been recorded in the indigenous creation myths of many cultures, and we've gone through these cycles, and they're based on precession of the equinox, 26,000 year cycle that has to do with Earth's wobble on its axis as it's spinning through space. One revolution of that wobble takes 26,000 years and it moves retrograde backward. This is how they trace the ancient ones trace the band of the zodiac. This is why, for example, the Mayan calendar shows a cycle of time that starts at 3113 BC and ends at 2012. And this 26,000-year cycle, known as the Great Year, has its cosmic winter, its cosmic fall, its cosmic spring, and its cosmic summer. And we've been in the darker, or the winter state now. As we move into Aquarius, we come into the spring state, the time of new growth and new beginning. It's Scorpio vibrating at the higher octave, not that of the scorpion, but of the phoenix, rising from the ashes, which again leads us to the destruction, breeds creation mode of evolution. So I believe that we are coming back into an age of enlightenment that has manifested before on this planet, and that we will go through some intense changes, both in the infrastructure of the way things are now with world governments and whatnot. I could see those transforming.
and transforming in a much more gentle way than some apocalyptic meltdown. And with what's happening now with the American politics, for example, is a testament to that. You know, and what's happening with our economy. Those in power are being forced to the sober realization that the greed and the maliciousness and the control cannot continue. Not because of some compassion for the masses on their part, but because their own livelihood is being threatened now. So they got no choice but to conform to the program, and the program has changed, and the program is positive change. And dualities are collapsing all around us. Time is unraveling, and it's seen in so many ways. You could take simple names and anagrams. You know, we've gone through this tension with the Muslim-Christian thing, and now I believe that's winding itself out. Why I see those dualities collapsing in simple names. Osama bin Laden, you can get Obama, Joe Biden, you can get Biden, and you can. And that's just interesting to see for the Christian and the Muslim thing where there's been so much conflict, to see in these names of those in power on both of these sides that have these influences on the masses, these anagrams, yeah? Again, dualities collapsing, facing themselves, peace and resolve wanting to come forward. Transmutation is the energy of the Archangel Michael, reconciling darkness unto light. All matter, all form, all consciousness is intrinsically pure light. The fact that we see it as darkness, that's just a misperception of the matrix through the bio equipment. You know, there's something else going on a higher level that we're not aware of. But in any event, dark forces should not be banished to some hell. So, for example, delusion to me would be somebody saying that they are possessed by dark demons, and another person saying, I have the authority in the name of such and such a god to cast a certain spell or do a rite to banish that demon from you back to the eternal hell it came from. That's to me, that's bullshit, pardon my French, because I believe, based on my own mystical experience, that we have the ability to turn that darkness back into light. And that intrinsically all was light.
But can there ever be light unless there is also darkness?
Well, that's a statement relative to the matrix. When you get out of the matrix, when you get out of the world of form, photonic light, pure light, is all there is. It's all energy. Darkness isn't really darkness. Dark light is referenced to photonic light. Black holes, for example, they appear to be darkness, but they're filled with quantum light. Yeah? So you have to be able to distinguish between...
Well, I guess, you know, I always think I've seen the world as positive and negative, and you can't have positive without negative or vice versa.
It only relative to this world of form and matter, which in my opinion is not the true reality, which is but a mirror, and everything is flipped, and dualities manifest. And the true reality, what appears to be, is perfect unity and perfect light, all embracing at all times. And that is the intrinsic state that any mystic finds in deep meditation or prayer. You know, so it's interesting because it's a major paradox. From the level, from the experience of the mystic, all of us are already there. And there is no positive, negative in that sense. There's just what is. So what if the pure photonic light that we are is somehow being reconstituted through a filter, through a matrix, and being turned into artificial light, what we would call sunlight? And to give the Egyptian term Ra. To me, Ra is false light. The dark light is the true light, the light that cannot be seen by the visible eye. You know, it transcends the physical world.
So, if you were to give advice for someone who wanted to expand themselves, to begin to understand mysticism better, what would be the first step that you'd recommend?
I would recommend, first of all, to research in a detached manner without buying into any ideology, even one existing within your head now, to let go and to just research what is out there in terms of creation myths and the story of the evolution of mankind, to understand the physics and the psychology behind the process of consciousness. In this search, one will make connections, and you will strike chords that will resonate within you, and you will get guidance that will help you to put things together. But most of us
tend not to want to do the research and want to do the work. And then there's the meditation, the prayer, the yoga. There's the sincerity and the compelling. And it seems if you don't got the compelling, you're just not going to get there. The tendency will be to spin in la-la land, to spin on the phenomena. And again, this is all said in relation to our identification with the matrix, with the world of form. Outside of the world of form, it seems that there are no rules. It's all light, and all is accepted and all is tolerated. And I would suppose if I was in my mortal awareness, what would death be to me? What would pain be to me? If I knew intrinsically and for sure and certain that this world of form is just a matrix of quantum particles vibrating in waveform, and could glimpse that other side, be like, well, wow, okay, I can see why the mystic comes away, you know, with God is always laughing and everything is how it should be. And the silent witnessing awareness of who you are never diminishes or loses light nor gains. It is pure, simple, intrinsic light. So again, you have to study the physiology and the psychology and the chemistry behind the physical processes to understand the supernatural as well, and that's the path of the true mystic. The mystic is a skeptic. What do I know? All I know for sure is all knowledge is based on insufficient data. You know, I'm not even sure about that.
In your journey as a mystic in training, have you ever made incorrect assumptions or decisions?
I am sure I have. You mean in my personal life or
right.
in my reading?
Right. No, in your personal life.
Well, of course. You know, you're again, you got to look at it as you're bound by the physiology and you're in a fallen state. You know, the soul that we are is the sleeping beauty. You know, the prince in the story is the rational cognitive mind. You know, and the prince has to kiss the sleeping beauty to awaken her. So it has to be a concerted effort from the rational mind to be able to access the transrational mind of who you really are.
So in the process of researching mysticism and all its encompassing bits and parts, how do you weed the chaff from the wheat?
You stumble through it, you know, like Mo, Larry, and Curly, I'm telling you. The spirit of the fool is what you want to embrace. You know, stories like Being There with Peter Sellers or Forrest Gump, there's a lot being said there. There was a reason why the village idiot was revered, or why the court jester could tell the king what nobody else could tell him. Because the fool was so whacked out of the rational mind that these insights or flashes would come from the intuitive mind that resonated. There was a way of being able to get a clearer channel. Again, it's such a great thing. It's so easy to spin on the phenomena. You know, and so I'll give you an example of how I can, how I've made mistakes mystically and spiritually. I had an experience back in the mid-90s at my brother's house in Southern California where I went out of the body and watched four Indian spirits proceed to attack my physical body, if you will. And as I wasn't hovering, I was feet on the floor, but I was in spirit watching them taunting me and giving me little slaps, and they were mischievous little gremlin-like fellas. And the sphere of light manifests in the center of the room at the same time and hit the couch where my body was, and I popped back in my body and jumped up and started doing Our Fathers and Hail Marys. And at that time, that was the only way I knew how to pray, born and raised a Catholic. In any event, next 3 days, my 10 and 6-year-old nephews had dream visions of these four Indians. Even the description, my 10-year-old described the Indian that met him underground. I won't go into all the story because it's this long. But I asked him how the Indians dressed, and he says, well, he's like a turban on his head, and he was wearing a cape. And I was like, well, there's no Indian that I know. Until I did the research. Chumash wore turban-style serapis, and turban-style headdresses and serapis.
Okay.
So, you know, again, I'm getting hits here. But my mind is spinning on delusion. I go to see a psychic, I'll try to condense the story a bit. But I go to see a psychic, and I bring Grandma, and I bring my oldest nephew, Mitch, you know, because we were all experiencing this phenomena together. This is in Southern California, and this cat
starts the reading, you know, if he blesses him with a sage wand, I start to tell him my experience. And he closes his eyes, and as I'm talking, he says, I see you in the desert, and there's a chief that comes to you. You're naked, and you're covering your genitals. And the chief will come to you, and he'll put his hand out. And you are to put your hand out, and he'll put his hand on top of yours, and you open it, and you give him the stone. I'm like, what the frick is this, you know? But I'm like, it means something, because I have been here spirits in my dreams. Oh, wow, cool. And, you know, of course, but as I'm leaving, he comes out, and he says, I got two names for you, Pahana and the Paraclete. Pahana ties into Hopi legend. Pahana is the son of the Hopi chief that is supposed to return at the end of this world, in the emergence of the fifth world, and bring the missing half of the Fire Clan tablet, which is like the creator's loss to the Hopi. And he will return as a light-eyed white man from the west, you know. So what did I think? I thought I was Pahana.
Ah, okay. So then what did you do?
Well, just the natural thing one would do. I quit my really good job, estranged myself from my family, put a bunch of rocks in my car that was my personal medicine wheel, and decided to go up to the mountain to the Hopi mesas and find the missing Fire Clan tablet so I could find the chief naked in the desert and present it to him, and the fifth world would come forward and I would fulfill my role and my destiny. And there were many, many episodes that supported my hypotheses. And again, this is a testament to what you believe you can manifest. And you got to be careful. For example, sitting in my medicine wheel at Sunset Crater, playing with a volcanic rock and putting little stones in the rock just to buy the time, because I'm sitting there waiting for my vision, you know, which never came. But in any event, reading that next night, Frank Waters' Book of the Hopi, right, the next couple of pages told the story of Mahasu, the guardian of the earth, as he waited for the children to emerge from the reed after the last purification. While he was waiting, he would play a game with a rock where you put all the little rocks in it. So again, I'm doing what Mahasu is doing. That's another sign. And I thought this was the gift that I was going to present to the Hopi. And sure enough, I made my way. A hawk gave me directions. I followed the hawk, and that's how I found my way up to the third mesa, in my opinion. Yeah, the hawk.
That's interesting.
And he would circle around me when I was going the wrong way, and he'd swoop down at my car, and he'd fly off, and he'd keep going the same direction. And I finally found that road. It took me up to the third mesa. Picked up a hitchhiking, you know, and they're not too cool about the white people coming hanging around the mesas. The Navajo are even a little more suspicious of the white man, and I can understand why. But this guy was so freaked out by me, you know, and I didn't realize it at the time. I'm spewing out all this stuff, and I believe I'm Pahana, and, you know, he's got to... At one point, we stop at the side of the road to pee, you know, and, of course, it's sacred land, so I can't just pee. And we'll have pee, and I'm covering it up, and so he's looking at me like, are you nuts? Yeah, but in any event, he gets me up to the third mesa. Pardon me, and I spend the next couple of days trying to find a medicine man. Trying to find a chief. It had to be of the Parrot Clan, because it was from the Parrot Clan. No, it was the Fire Clan, with the tablet and all. But in any event, I'm right at the entrance of the ancient city of Oraribi at one point, and a couple pulls up in a truck and asks me what I'm doing there. And I said, well, I'm looking for a chief, and I think I have a message from him. And she said, well, you see Chief Stanley. You live over there in that house there. He points to a center block house. And I said, are you in the Fire Clan? She said, no, he's the Parrot Clan. I said, well, any clan will do now, you know?
At this point, you just want a clan, right?
Clan, man. I got the rock, you know? And I'm wearing all these colors. I have my super fine gangster coat from the 70s with a big fur collar and my headband and my staff and the colors of Pahana on me and this piece of driftwood shaped like a human heart that I got dressed up with colors that came out of Venice Beach of the ocean. I thought God was saying, my heart is with you. It's time to go, you know? So in any event, now I'm going to do it. I'm going to walk up to this guy's door, and I'm going to knock on his door, and he's going to take one look at me, and he's going to know. He's going to see the colors, he's going to see my sincerity. He's going to know I bring a message from Pahana. And so the first thing I do, I go to the wrong house. And the door is open, so I just walked into the house. And I had a pocket full of rocks. I was picking up rocks everywhere, just so I was seeing images and shapes and rocks. And
And there's something to it, but then again, you could spin. And these poor, two poor Hopi ladies, they were just so freaked out by me. And they said, oh, no, this is the wrong house. See Stanley over there. Oh, we don't, thank you. We don't want your rocks. I'm trying to give them rocks. They have them rocks. Oh, Lordy. In any event, so, okay, well, I'm curly in robes. You know, classic story of spinning on a phenomena, but yet something really going on. Because here's what happens. Knock on the door. Who is it? I bring you a message from the mystic warrior, Pahana. What? I bring you a message from Pahana, and I'm talking, and he opens that door, and he's going to see me, and he's going to know. And that chief was stone blind. Chief Stanley was a blind man. And I didn't get it. Because there was a big message there from Spirit, and that message was, it's not about the props and the colors, baby boy, and you're a little off here. He still invited me in his home, had me put a few coals on his in his little potbelly stove. I told him the gift I had. He said he couldn't accept it. He had to consult with the elders. And I left very angry, cursing God and myself. What the hell was I doing out here? It's been 3 days now. I quit a great job. I have no more resources. My family thinks I'm nuts. I probably am. And I drive off-road. And I bend the rims on two of my wheels. I have two tires flat. And kicking the car, cursing, and here comes a drunk Navajo in the middle of the night, walking from Tuba City to the Hopi village of Moencopi. And he sees my dilemma, and he offers some help. And cool, right? I had a quilt for my grandma that I put around him, and we pulled that car out the ditch, my little Toyota hatch, and we're pushing it down the road, and I had a Native American tape playing. And I was telling him the story, and he starts praying in Navajo. And he says, well, my auntie is in a peyote ceremony in a teepee. And it's like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Teepee on the Navajo Reservation.
I swear to God, we found that teepee. We found that freaking teepee. 3 o'clock in the morning. And I got, okay, I got a piece of driftwood shaped like the human heart. There's a little, maybe about a foot off of the ground. There's enough of a space in the teepee. Maybe not even a foot. There was enough space where I could shove that under the teepee. And I shoved this driftwood under it. And I yelled, message from Great Spirit. And a whole bunch of Navajo shaman tripping their butts off on peyote got very upset. While the drunk Navajo is stumbling around, going, can I come in? It's cold out there. And I'm like, these guys are going to scalp me, Jack. I'm not that neat, you know? But that's when one of the shaman, Harrison, took me. He tied my car to his truck and wheeled me onto his property. Spent the whole night pounding out my rims with a sledgehammer. His wife fed me. I slept. They got the heart, by the way. The heart stayed in his little mantle. He lived in a little trailer, and there were two structures, one where the kids lived and the other where the mother and father lived. But in any event, you know, we talked about the medicine ways, and, you know, both decided that there might be something to it. And at one point, the car was parked in front of a trailer in Tuba City. A Navajo family lived there, and the young kids liked me. The older women thought it was nuts, and perhaps I was. They want nothing to do. You're evil, dude. You got weird stuff with your rocks and your strange medicines, you know. But in any event, an Eskimo.
An Eskimo, in Arizona on the Navajo Reservation.
Absolutely. An Eskimo said, very seriously, a young Eskimo dude, and he was an Eskimo. I kid you not. If your magic is real, you go sit on the kiva in Moencopi, and the medicine man will come to you.
Okay.
So I walked.
There you went.
And I sat on that kiva. And not 10, 15 minutes, a fella comes up, old Hopi man, looks up at me and says, what are you doing up there? Do you know where you're at? You know what you're on? And I said, yeah, but I think I have something for your people. I have a message for your people. And I had my stones and crystals in the sand on top of the kiva. I drew spirals and sacred symbols. And he walks up, you know, like a little spiral, kind of sort of stick in case you walk up to it. And he looks down at a crystal and picks it up and holds it in his hand up to the light a certain way and immediately fell to his knees, holding his heart, praying and hoping. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, dude, what are you seeing? What are you seeing? And he's like, I can't tell you now. Come with me. And he tried to bring me in the kiva. The kiva was locked. Brought me to another area, this old gnarly shack and a couple of trees. Said, you pray there, I pray here.
And after that whole incident, he said he was a crystal. I asked him, are you a medicine man? He said, no, I'm a crystal initiate. And since I was a kid, I was raised to learn to look through crystals. And my people said I would have a message for them. Can I keep your crystal? Well, sure, dude, you know. And this man actually donated a tire to me as well, too. We walked for a while and talked, and he told me how the Hopi were the keepers of the earth. The only tool they used in their healing was an eagle feather, how to eat certain grasses and whatnot. But the point being, there was something happened there that was profound. It really meant something to this man, and that was connected with the whole thing that I was spinning on that I thought was pure delusion. There was something going on. What it was, I don't know. But that's one of my classic spin stories. And there's a lot more to the story, but better take a whole nother interview. Because my first healing happened there where I used frog medicine to remove a Navajo curse for a family. And, again, extraordinary experiences happened. It did validate that I was onto something. But you got to be careful. If the body mind is not ready for the stuff, it gets mistranslated. Next thing you know, you think...
You're on the Hopi Mesa with a bunch of rocks.
Right, thinking you're their messiah, you know?
Yeah, so... You know, earlier when we talked, you told me a little bit about your name, Zaba. So why don't you tell us about that?
Well, it's, pardon me, Polish. My last name, Zaba, means frog. It means frog in Polish. And it's an interesting thing because frog medicine is the medicine used to clear houses and people of dark or demonic energies. That's the symbol of the exorcist. And it was frog medicine that was utilized on that Hopi reservation, by the way, too. So I guess I'll get that story in quickly. At one point, I met back up with a drunk Navajo, who was still drunk, who wanted to get more booze, who I thought I was taking him to a store, but I took him to another house in Tuba City. And apparently, I don't know if the people were making the booze there or what. But I waited in the car, and 2 minutes later, a girl ran out and said, are you a medicine man? I said, yeah! Yes, sir! I mean, if you knew all the phenomena that has happened to me and my experiences with that, you would have probably thought the same as I. I may not know what I'm doing, but I know I'm a medicine man. She said, well, come in the house. So I walk in this little one-room cinder block house with a woman in bed, and she's surrounded by people that are her relatives, and they're waiting for her to die. I don't know this until afterwards. And, you know, I asked what happened, and she said that the Navajo shaman had put a curse on her, and they had tried to get it removed, and they were unsuccessful. Was there anything that I could do? And I had my little animal medicine card deck, and I fanned the deck and asked her to pick a card. She picked a frog card. I thought, that's pretty funny, because that's my last name, you know, and I refer to myself as Peter Pan, the Frog Prince. But in any event, I read from the book, and I start reading what it's saying. You know, the shaman would put frogs, stuff frogs around his neck, and hold the image of a frog in his head as you put water in his mouth and you sprayed the victim. And I said, okay, could you get me some water? And the sister got me water, and I put the water in my mouth and I sprayed over her, and this woman sat up. She spit up bile, yellowish, greenish bile. I was shaking like a leaf, and I was in a heightened state, in a static state, but didn't know it at the time. Yeah. And I had stumbled out onto the porch, and the sister came out and said, you saved my sister's life. I said, no, maybe God did, but I don't think I did. And the drunk Navajo took me to his house. He was part of the family as well. And he had me sitting in front of his potbelly stove. He had his little daughter, a few years old, I mean, more than 4 or 5 years old, bring out an Indian blanket. He folded it a certain way, told me to sit there, put herbs and a little shovel, heated them up in the potbelly stove, and went around me and blessed me and gave me a medicine bag. And I proceeded to get blessings from so many sources through that whole experience. But yeah, the frog medicine is a medicine used for clearing haunted houses and demonic spirits from people. So I have a knack for exorcism, and I've done rituals throughout the years. I don't hang a shingle for it, and it takes a lot to get me motivated to build a circle and to do an altar for somebody and to work on that level. But it seems I have a gift for that. It's funny that my name is equivalent to exorcism. Now, also in Egyptian language, the Ba is the soul. Za is immortality. Za Ba means immortal soul.
them. So the Immortal Soul Exorcist is kind of a handle that comes with the name. You'd be surprised what are in words.
Yeah, we can play with words a lot. It happens to be one of the things that I like doing, play with words.
I'm telling you, I do. I see it all the time. Just buying the cards, you know. And you take words, a simple word like nation. I don't belong to no nation, because a name means no, and shun means we don't want nothing to do with you. And I don't come from no country. I come from a yoni, a womb of life, a tree of life. And I ain't a peephole, because you know what that is. And you can just go on and on. What are we really saying when we're saying words? Those phonics are going out there and resonating when we're writing. They call it spelling for nothing. You're spelling, you're using symbols to evoke. It's ritual magic. You're writing, you're creating a right. It's thought magic. We're already practicing the technology. All of us are masters at it. Such masters that we've created this illusion that's like Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. That's like a reverse dysfunctional pseudo-reality, a mirror of the true reality, the ethereal reality.
Now, a lot of the people in the virtual auditorium have questions about whether or not you've ever channeled anything from an extraterrestrial.
Well, yes, and I can't say a little green man. A card deck that I call the Oracle cards, I spelled it with an A, was, I believe, channeled from a white dolphin from the star Sirius named Aurora. And again, it's a long story. My stories are long, and I don't need to embellish them. But the transmission and the download had to do with devising a deck based on the major arcana of traditional tarot, adding three major arcana, but combining it in a magical system that shows the relationships between colors, numbers, shapes, and sounds. As I started putting this deck together, which I eventually marketed 1,000 of the decks and sold them here locally, I realized that I was onto something. This was a whole treatise in thought technology and physics. And who was Aurora, the white dolphin from the star Sirius? Well, a friend of mine, Jeanette Littlefeather, was proficient in Gematria, which is a system with the Kabbalah of reducing words to numbers and finding similar meanings. Yeah? So she said, well, why don't we do some gematria on Aurora and see what we get? And we do it, and she brings out the list. Aurora means the crow of the ark, the Alpha and Omega in three languages, the Ansoth Or, which is the third level of the tree of life, the arcs above the Kabbalistic tree of life, the Ain, the Ansoth, and the Ansoth Or. The Ansoth Or is the limitless light, dark light, photonic light, yeah? So the extraterrestrial, it turned out that I channeled the white dolphin, turned out to be who I call the sacred feminine, the goddess, the Holy Mother. And she seems to come from the star Sirius. And if you do your research on Sirius, a star system that has been venerated by many, many cultures, and these indigenous cultures have the mythology of the ancient ones that came from that star and brought knowledge to others, even so far as the state has created Homo sapiens sapiens through genetic engineering. It'll give you pause for thought. But I'll tell you, everyone in the psychic community realized Joey had tapped into something. At the same time, living on top of Big Daddy's strip joint on Bourbon Street, I was floored on my knees in rapture, connected to the Holy Mother is the only way I could say. Kundalini shooting up my body, and giving me such a feeling of euphoria as I fell to my knees, tears spontaneously coming out, and I smelled flowers all around me. I could spit in my hand and I could smell the smell of flowers and fruits. And getting a download in my head that said, I'm the mother of all mothers, and from my womb all of creation came. I'm not just your mother, I'm the one true love you've been looking for your whole life. Now this woman has been in my dreams since childhood. Dark woman with long dark hair, white robe, and barefooted. There's been times, one example that she manifests had to do with extraterrestrial phenomena. And I've seen orbs myself. I've seen them on several occasions. But in any event, in this one, I'm walking through the suburban street, and I'm seeing these orbs that come real close, and now they become the bottom of spaceships. You know, so I'm seeing instrumentation, or, you know, like pipes and bells and
and stuff like that. And people are panicking all around me. And as I'm walking, I notice a white house, and there she is. She's in the doorway, and she's motioning me to come in. So I walk into the house, all white. Everything's white, except for a green breathing glob, like a big, oh, the size, big, three times as big as a beach ball. And it's breathing. And I walk up to it as natural as possible and put my hands on the side of it, and a opaque green eye pops out. And I go and just shove my head down into it and come back up, and that was the end of that dream. But yeah, there's something to the extraterrestrial connection. I think there are many different races on this planet. The Syrians seem to be the more benevolent and seem to be our progenitors. I believe that there are those of us that have half of our DNA is the DNA of these intelligences from the star system Sirius, and the other half from indigenous creatures, Cro-Magnon, Neanderthal, etc.
Well, Joseph, we're winding down the last couple minutes of the show. I really had a ball interviewing you tonight.
Thank you. I had a ball being interviewed by you, darling.
And it's been really, really fun. So, folks, thank you for joining us for the journey tonight. But we are now out of time. I hope that all of you have enjoyed this program tonight as much as I have, and that it has provided you with some illumination for your personal journey to truth. Tune in again next week. We will be joined by Elizabeth Egan Cox once again, and we'll be giving away a copy of her book to one of our lucky audience members. With that, though, we are out of time. So, good night, and I'm your host,